Hey there, welcome to another episode of The Leftovers. This is the podcast after the show where I keep talking. Sometimes I cheat and do it before the show because I know that there will be stories I want to talk about, but I just don't have the time because we have too many guests, etc. But at the end of the day, this is extra content for you to enjoy, and I hope you do. In fact, if you do, please give me a 5-star review on whatever platform it is you are listening to this podcast. A couple stories tied to the Biden reelection campaign and the White House that I think are worth talking about. There's a Fox News story today about the campaign's new push to win over the group of voters that they say is a quote-unquote force to be reckoned with. And specifically, it's the LGBTQ plus IA plus plus minus community. They're saying that they're going to pull out the, I don't know, all the stops to court the LGBT vote. You already have it, and that's not going to go away. And as much as they think that there are like millions of transgender people out there, there aren't. And frankly, you know, when they stop talking to the activists and they talk to your everyday regular Joe or Jane who happens to be gay or straight or bi or whatever, they may still vote for Democrats overall, but they share the exact same concerns as pretty much everybody else, which is crime, homelessness, drug use, cost of living, inflation. All these things matter to the LGBT community just as much as the straight community, right? And frankly, again, as much as I think the community isn't going to, certainly not in the short term, change its vote to the point where it matters to Biden or to Trump, I think there's this risk that by constantly telling everyone that you're fighting to allow a toddler to be openly trans and to put pornography in the hands of children while pretending that it's totally normal, you're alienating folks within the LGBT community. I'm telling you this as someone who's actually in the community. And it's very similar to their problem with the Jewish vote right now. They are clearly emboldening and enabling the anti-Semitic movement within its party, which is basically progressives. And yes, I believe them to be anti-Semitic. I said this on Varney and Company this morning on Fox Business, this morning being Wednesday. I was asked whether or not there's room for Jews in the Democrat Party. I said, well, yeah, but it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller because every time you embolden the progressive movement and every time it gets larger, you're just pushing more Jews out. And while I don't think mainstream Democrats hold an anti-Semitic view or an anti-Israel view, I think when you have Chuck Schumer, of all people, selling Jews out and selling Israel out to placate progressives and try to help Biden stay in office, I think all you're doing is alienating. Now, do I think that's going to happen to a degree that matters politically in the presidential election in November? No, because Jews have a tendency to live in big Democrat cities. Now, Florida have some, have a large Jewish vote. That's an exception as far as the liberal cities and states in which Jews live, but you're talking about New York, you're talking about LA, like that's where you're going to get the majority of Jewish voters. And there, let's say every single Jewish voter in both of those cities decided to vote Republican or not vote. It doesn't change anything there because there's not enough of them to swing an election. Now, it could swing a House race. It could maybe swing a Senate race. It can certainly swing statewide races to a degree, but it's not going to have any impact on the presidential election. But it's alienating and pushing people in the other direction. And, you know, this is a problem that gets worse over time. And you can look specifically at the Latino vote. Latinos didn't just overnight decide, yeah, I'm going to skip out on the Democrats. I'm a vote for a Republican. No, it took years and years and years to get to that point. And I would argue, ironically, it was the embrace of the fringe part of the gender identity movement within the LGBT community that really pushed them over, because you're dealing with Latino voters who are very family first, very faith-based, generally speaking, and they also want rules to be followed. And I think, like so many others, they resent the idea that anyone can just sort of skip the line and illegally cross into this country and then get treated better than someone who goes through the process. I think when you tell them that God doesn't exist and that religion is for rubes, you're turning them off. When you say that a 12-year-old should be able to get surgical intervention and get put on hormone therapy without parental consent, you are clearly trying to break up a family. And I just don't think that they like that idea. These are hardworking community members who don't like the idea of just giving a free pass to people who take on a gender study degree, goes $100,000 into debt, and then gets the government to pay it off. I just think that that is naturally going to push people away. And I think that that's true of most communities. But given all of the issues and the clear demographic shifts, I think that this matters. And you know, I talked a little bit about this on the show on Tuesday where, you know, why are men all of a sudden, working class men, blue collar men, why are they leaving the Democrat Party and going to Republicans? Why are they going to Trump? And I do think that there's a fair argument to be made that it could be a Trump factor versus a GOP factor. I think you can also make the argument that without Trump, you would have maybe even more. I don't know. I can see both sides of the argument. But we're clearly seeing that shift again. Why? Well, at some point when you call out toxic masculinity because a guy likes to be a guy, you're turning folks off. When you're telling people you don't have to work hard anymore, you should work remotely, work in air quotes, you're turning off blue-collar workers in most parts of this country. The Democrat Party likes to focus on the elites on the coasts, and not even all the coasts, or at least all the land on the coasts. We're talking about LA, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. Then on the East Coast, you know, you're really only talking about New York for the most part. But those are the people that they care about most and try to represent. They don't care about anyone else as far as their party power structure goes. They think as long as they get the you know, urban vote, the urbanist vote, that they're golden. And yeah, you might be golden in that state just because of the population of, you know, California, Oregon, although Oregon is changing a little bit, Washington, New York, Massachusetts. Yeah, sure, you might get the states, but okay, you're losing in places like Michigan and Georgia and Wisconsin and even potentially Pennsylvania. Those are all swing states that, you know, in theory, shouldn't really be swing states. Georgia should be a red state, I would argue. But, I mean, you're looking at Michigan. It should be a blue state pretty consistently, you would think. I can maybe make the argument for Pennsylvania. But, you know, it shouldn't be on the fence for them, just based on the demographics of the state. Same thing for, you know, Nevada and Arizona. Now, the abortion story changes things a little bit in Arizona. Perhaps not as much as I fear, but it's, you know, it clearly does have an impact. But these shouldn't be purple states just based on demographics. So they don't seem to see anything wrong here. So they'll just double down or triple down or quadruple down in just embracing some of the crazy. Meanwhile, they're just blatant hypocrites at the end of the day. There was a story this week about the Justice Department not turning over the audio recordings of Robert Hur's interview with President Biden. House Republicans put in the subpoena. Attorney General Merrick Garland was supposed to provide this a couple days ago. He chose not to. They're just ignoring it, which means he could be held in contempt of Congress. Now, I'm told that when you're held in contempt of Congress, you go to jail. I mean, at least if you're a Republican. When you're a Democrat, you just don't care. You just do not care. Merrick Garland's not going to investigate himself for what is clearly a political withholding of the audio. I think they floated out the transcript, and they did it, by the way, the morning of a hearing because they knew it was going to be a bad look for the president. And they know it'll be a bad look for the president if we get recordings of it because we're going to hear his voice. We're going to hear him be very tired, and you're going to hear him confused. And even though I think the transcript, just reading it, makes him sound really, really bad, when you hear someone's voice being forgetful and weary and tired, especially when it's the president of the United States, yeah, that's going to be way worse. And the White House knows that. And the thing is, if I were them, I would put out the audio is going to come out. I don't know why they would delay putting out the audio, because each day that they delay it is a day closer to the election, and it's another day closer to a decision that will be made by voters as to whether or not they have faith that Joe Biden could even do the job for another 4 years if they can convince themselves that they just don't like Trump that much. That's all that this delay is doing. It doesn't quite make sense to me as a political strategy, but okay. Now, what was funny yesterday, MSNBC's Ari Melber, he had Michael Avenatti on the show. He was doing the interview from prison, which I thought was actually kind of funny. And they were talking about the Trump lawsuit, the hush money lawsuit in New York, or the case against the president, the former president. And he called it stale, but he also said that one thing is that he's going to still be found guilty, but he was very pessimistic towards the trial. I want to play just a short clip from MSNBC. And it gives you a little bit of a sense of where Michael Avenatti is coming from. But also, for me, it was more about how it was treated afterwards by another guest.
That led to the exposure of the evidence in this case. The New York trial now will be Donald Trump's first and possibly only trial this year. How do you assess the strength of the prosecution's case?
Well, I think what I'm about to say is going to surprise a lot of people, and that is that, you know, I think this is the wrong case at the wrong time, Ari.
Ari's dumb face was shocked. I think that the case
is in many ways stale at this juncture. You're talking about conduct that occurred some 8 years ago. I think the fact that it's occurring in state court in New York is a mistake. And I think that when you are going to potentially deprive tens of millions of Americans of their choice for the presidency of the United States, whether we agree with those folks or not, or regardless of what we may think of Donald Trump, I think it's a mistake to do it based on a case of this nature.
Now, oddly enough, of course, I agree with his position, but it is kind of interesting to hear how maybe prison has changed him, because he sounds kind of reasonable. He was always a frothing at the mouth progressive who hated Donald Trump with a passion, or at least he pretended to, because it was getting him on MSNBC and CNN and was getting him a lot of praise, right? I mean, there was talk about how he should run for president, right? But his point there was right. What was funny was right after the interview, Ari Melber had some guests on, one of whom was a former prosecutor coming out of the, I think it was the Watergate trials, or the Watergate scandal, I should say. And he just absolutely ripped into Michael Avenatti because he said what he just said. The guest was a big believer in Trump's guilt, and he's a big fan, blah, 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 blah. But he just kind of ripped into Avenatti, calling him out as someone who doesn't know anything about the case. This is a guy who wasn't involved. We should be completely ignoring everything he has to say. And I don't think he would say that unless he agreed with him. Now, if Michael Avenatti came out and said the opposite of what he just said, you're going to have Nick Ackerman, who's the prosecutor, who was the guest, and we'll play audio of him in a second. I think you would have them come out. He would come out, the guest, and praise him and say, oh, you know, this is why he shouldn't even be in jail. This is a great legal mind who got a raw deal here. I'm so upset. This is absurd, blah, 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 blah. So let's play just a little bit coming from that interview on MSNBC last night.
Thank you for being here on a night of a newsworthy interview.
Oh,
Mr.
God.
Avenatti has many controversies associated with him.
Kidding.
I asked him about those. But first and foremost, Nick, what do you think of the two points he makes there, that
him.
He does expect Trump to be convicted, but he also thinks there are issues in this case?
I wouldn't take his word on either of those two things. He knows nothing about this case. He was not involved in the mechanics of the case. He was not involved in the payoffs. He was not involved in how it was set up. He's not a witness in this case. The witnesses in this case are, it's not just Michael Cohen, like he says, it's also David Pecker, who was the head of the National Enquirer. Mm-hmm. What the indictment alleges is a scheme to basically catch and kill individuals who are offering information on Donald Trump to keep that from the voting public in 2016.
And that became a crime of lying to the government and potentially a related election crime. When you say he doesn't know things, you mean he was not the lawyer at the time that this went down.
Right. He has no personal knowledge.
He does know a lot of things that most people don't know, whether you like it or not. I mean, you might be thinking that he's just criticizing the DA or whatever your reasons are. Avenatti knows what Stormy Daniels' state of mind was at the time that this came out in 18. He knows how he dealt with Mr. Cohen at that time. He and Mr. Cohen both ended up going to prison. What did you think of his concern about Cohen as a witness?
Well, sure, Cohen has problems as a witness. But the question before the jury is not whether you think he lied in the past. It's whether you can believe him now. And so you've got the
test. Which, I will say, in both fairness and criticism, applies to both lawyers.
Well, right? Yes.
Whether you believe either of them then and now.
But Avenatti's not going to be a witness in this case. He's got nothing, zero, to do with it. He has no knowledge as to any of the allegations in this complaint. He talks about the case being stale. That was a motion that was already made by Donald Trump and denied by Judge Mershon.
So I would say, based on the situation, he's unlikely to be a witness. But for our reporting purposes, you don't know who all the witnesses will be.
I can tell you one witness is not going to be up there, and that's Avenatti.
Well,
there is no
way. Did the DA tell you that?
No, but there is no way any reasonable district attorney would ever put that guy on the witness stand.
Now, in fairness, by the way, I mean, this is coming out of Alvin Bragg's office, so I think we can at least say he's not a reasonable district attorney. But, I mean, he's obviously right. Michael Avenatti is not going to be called to the witness stand. And, you know, later on in the interview, Ari Melber says, you know, well, you don't know who the defense might call. Why would they call Michael Avenatti? In what world would the defense call Michael Avenatti? It's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. But look, at the end of the day, I just thought it was kind of funny. You just had this big interview. You set it up as like, this is a breaking news story. This is a major interview. Oh, it sucked. Who cares what he has to say? I just kind of like that. Thank you so much for listening. Really do appreciate it. See you tomorrow.